1.
1850 715 815.
Good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Katie Hannon sitting in for Joe again this week. 51551 is our text number. Eileen McManus, we're coming up to the second anniversary of a day that changed your life and the lives of everyone in your family forever.
That's right, yes. That's true. We lost our Glenn on the 5th of August 2017. And it's just been a hard journey. I'm not sure what angle you want to look at or what you want me to talk about.
Well, you lost Glenn in a motorbike accident. And I suppose I drove up from Kerry on Sunday, beautiful summer's evening, and I was overtaken by so many motorcyclists, which always makes my heart quicken because you think the speed they're going at. But your son, Glenn, was no speed merchant.
No, Glenn didn't speed. He would have carried out an advanced road safety for bikers. He would have been highly aware, and he would have driven so carefully. He earned the nickname of Miss Daisy.
From driving Miss Daisy.
Yeah, and he drove carefully, so we knew the hum of his bike. It was always that gentle hum. He was a very gentle young man. And people should also be aware that while drivers are, you know, a percentage of them will drive fast, but like you mentioned, these summer evenings are the times people are out on their bikes. Biking can be such a really nice sport, and it's just up to everyone, bikers and all road users, to be aware of the dangers. And something that sticks in my mind over the years has been Look Twice for Bikes.
Yeah, that was a road safety campaign, wasn't it?
Yeah, and that has always stuck in my mind.
Eileen, tell us about Glenn. He was your youngest son.
Yes, he was my youngest son. He got on with everyone. He was very diplomatic, quiet, gentle young man with a sense of fun to him. And he just was gentle in everything he did. And everything he did, he took attention to detail. He was in contact with all our family members on a regular basis. Like, a few days wouldn't pass, but we'd have been in contact with Glenn. And that wasn't just myself, his other two brothers, his dad, his cousins. You know, we're quite a big family, and he was always in contact with him.
And he had a special bond with his nephews and nieces.
Yes. And he was just loved by everyone. He had such a gentle nature. There were times in his life he wasn't totally healthy, but, you know, he made great recovery. And everyone looked out for Glenn, and everyone cared for and loved Glenn in every way.
And go back then, take us back to August 2017. Glenn was 34, was it?
He was 34. He was on a camping weekend. That was one of his pastimes. Motorbikes were a pastime. And he had got to love the outdoors and nature, and was staying in Mohill, which we had become very fond of. He loved the lake there and kayaking on the lake. So there were quite a group of family members and friends staying in Mohill that time. He was in great form. He had plans that evening to go meet friends and his girlfriend, and he went to the village to top his bike up with fuel. And on his way back, a car came out in front of him, and that was what happened to Glenn. So his family members were at the campsite. His cousin had heard his bike coming and that gentle hum of the bike. He ran to see. He didn't run. He just drove up at leisure to say, "Oh, Glenn's bike must have cut out. I'll go see, does he need help?" But he didn't expect what he did find. He went back to get Glenn's brother and his wife, and his dad all at the campsite. So there were quite a few family members with him at the scene, his cousin and his wife, and it was just a tragic event for everybody.
I can, Eileen, where were you then? Did you get that dreaded phone call?
I'm a member of a walking club, and I was walking on that particular day in County Sligo when I got the call. It's that call no family ever want to get, and it was another family member had called me. My nephew was with Glenn at the time. He called his mum, my sister, who called me, and she had the job of telling me there was an accident and I should return to her house. So at that point, I believed, you know, okay, he's had an accident and, you know, everything will be okay. But you do get a sense of, as you get nearer, I think we always have a sense of the reality. And I probably did know there was something wrong. And she had the job of breaking the news to me. And I won't go into the detail of that.
We can only imagine, Eileen. It is the worst of worst news that any mother could ever hear. Ultimately, the accident wasn't Glenn's fault, was it?
No. A driver had pulled out in front of Glenn. He had, you know, he wasn't driving at any speed. We did have a court case. The driver did say she didn't see Glenn until the last moment, and fair play to her, she did say that and come out and say that, and we didn't have to go through, you know, a whole questioning of the details of what happened.
You don't bear any ill will, though, to that driver, do you?
No, I don't bear any ill will. I'm sure she has her own tragedy to deal with, and she carries that with her forever. And accidents, you know, are terrible. Nobody sets out for this to happen. And, you know, it's just, you know, we can all think that if we did something different, there might have been a different outcome. But it's just the amount of coincidences that have to line up in the right order at the right time for such an event to happen. And nobody set out that morning for such an event. Do you know, I would see it as an inconceivable perfect storm.
Did you worry about Glenn, given that he had this love of bikes?
I would have worried. I would never have expected to lose Glenn in this way, of all people. He wasn't one of those guys that speed. And I'm sure there are many bikers out there, and I know a few, and they wouldn't speed, and they love their motorbikes at the summertime pastime. And I myself would have spent time as a passenger on a motorbike with my brother over the years, and I understand the love of it. And I never would have expected for us to lose Glenn in such a way.
What age was he when he got the bike, when he got into to motorbiking?
He probably had motorbikes for 10 years before that. It's hard to line up the years, but at least 10 years. Now, my other sons are probably saying, oh, ma'am, you know, it was so long, but I can't remember the detail.
But as you say, he was safety conscious. He wasn't a speeder. He was somebody who took a lot of care on the bike. So that gave you some comfort.
That gave me comfort. He had done an advanced road safety course for bikers. He was so aware, and I do believe he would have had heightened senses for the, you know, awareness on the road. But I believe, and I just believe he had no option. I'm so surprised at how it happened. I cannot go into my view of what I believed happened. I don't think it would be fair to some people if I were to say that on air. But I do believe he was so cautious.
But I suppose the thing about about motorbikes is that if something does go wrong, and we all know that things can go wrong in the world, that you're very vulnerable when you're on a bike. Your leathers are all that's between you and the road.
You've no protection, absolutely no protection, and I am so aware of that. But I also think drivers have to be aware of that as well and take that second look for the bikes, whereas cars are more visible to them. However, bikes do have lights, and his in particular would automatically switch the light on as he turned the bike on.
So that's really why you got in touch, Eileen, isn't it? To remind drivers out there that motorbikers are out there and they're very vulnerable, and that they need to take special care.
Yeah, and when your show were in touch with me and contacted me, I just said, if I can help bring awareness, if I can help bring attention, and if anyone's life can be saved from this, I think that would be the nice thing to do in Glenn's memory. I do believe that would be something he would want. And just bringing awareness. And something I've noticed in the last few days as I drive around, I can see as I exit from some junctions, the grass is long and I have to edge well out before I have a view. I'm not saying that was the case on this day, but if everyone paid that little bit more attention to the detail, we might save some accidents. And I know driving a car, we take it for granted instead of being aware of the dangers. And, it is a lethal weapon in cases like this. And we should be more aware of the dangers, not only the bike drivers, but all road users.
We're coming up now, Eileen, to the second anniversary again. I imagine anniversaries are a particularly difficult time, but are there any easy days?
Well, you think, okay, people would say to you when you get the first year, it gets easier. People say you get easier, and you keep thinking, okay, the easy time is coming. But I don't think any of our families would have experienced that at all. And we tend to say, it's a lie, it doesn't get easier. Yes, you do learn to live with it, but there are moments you get moments that just shake you and bring it back to the very moment, and you relive it. And the reality with time for us is probably more difficult, because you realise the reality that we're never going to have that conversation and again, and it's just his physical presence is just so missed.
Well, I can hear that in your voice, Eileen. Eileen, I want to thank you for telling us that story and talking about your much-loved son, Glenn, and we want to wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Seamus McGivern, you're a motorbiker yourself.
I am. I just want to say, Eileen, poor Eileen, I mean, it's just, that's something that you never, ever, ever forget, and condolences to her. I know it's 2 years ago, but
God, it's still obviously there, very raw for Eileen, indeed.
Yeah.
Have you ever had a spill off a bike, Seamus?
I didn't, touch wood. I'm here at the kitchen table now and touch wood, but I'd be very like the late Glenn. I'd consider myself very, very, very careful, maybe sometimes too careful. I'm from the minute I get on the bike, I'm sort of waiting for something to happen, which I've learned that it's not the best thing. It's not the best situation to be getting on a bike. You're a bit tense and you're just waiting all the time for a car. I drive into Dublin every day, and my biggest pet hate would be cars breaking and traffic lights. That would be a massive get up and go on me, like, where my lights would go green. And, you'd take off and then somebody decide to shoot across. That would happen to me easily 5 or 6 times a week, where cars would be just breaking the lights.
5 or 6 times a week?
Oh, yeah, easy. I mean, I could point out I could name the junctions where they are the worst of. Just there at Vincent Burns there in Palmerstown.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's like you'd be throwing out a set of dice to see who's going to, you know, your light could go green and you'd slowly take off, but then somebody would definitely, in morning and evening, the morning now would be a bit more heavier for breaking lights than the evening time. But definitely in the morning, like it's a free for all, really.
And Seamus, what kind of a bike do you drive?
I drive a BMW GS 1200.
So a fairly powerful bike.
Yeah. If you want it to be like a sports tourer, it'd be it's plenty fast. I mean, I'd never do what it's meant to do on it. I mean, I'd have mopeds, little small. 50, 60, 70 cc mopeds passing me in the morning, you know, in bus lanes and zipping in and out of traffic. And but you're like, I meet them at the lights anyway because the lights are red.
And are you driving a bike because it beats the commuter traffic or because you have you love motorbiking?
Well, I absolutely love the bike. I was telling the researcher that I got a job in, I'm a chef. And my first big proper job in a restaurant was Dobbin's Wine Bistro in Mount Street.
Oh, I remember it well, yeah.
And yeah, but I had no way of getting in. It was a bit away from the bus stops then. So my dad bought me a little Honda 50. And I used to go in and out of that in the hail, rain and snow. And I just got to love them then. I've had, I don't know how many different motorbikes I've had, but it's a love of mine.
But when you talk there, Seamus, though, about how nervous you are now, you get on a bike and as you say, you're automatically wondering what might happen. It's a big price to pay, isn't it, for a love of a bike? Is there a moment where you'll think, I won't be able to get on a bike anymore?
Well, I can't, yeah. I mean, I can't see it coming up very soon. But I mean, you know, you think like that, but then again, you're tottering along. Like, as I always say, and really I shouldn't be saying it now after Eileen been on, but I'd rather be late than dead late, is a lot of people would say, you know what I mean? I just potter along, and if I'm tipping into work, I know I probably get in trouble, but I do the bit of the bus lanes, as most bikers do. And like the traffic is stopped anyway, so if I'm doing 5 miles an hour, you know, I'm doing 5 miles an hour quicker than the man or woman sitting in a car. So I just take my time. I mean, I've had a good few friends now that have had accidents and were killed off bikes, but, you know, it's just...
But is part of that community, isn't it, though? That there are funerals, that it is so dangerous for so many people that you will inevitably have friends or people you know from that biking world that you will be going to a grave.
Yeah, I think a lot of bikers get a bad name because, like, I know some people that, like, they go hell for leather on their bikes, hail, rain or snow. I mean, I'm sure we've seen them all on the roads, you know, they'd be passing at that whatever speed. You know, and that sort of gives a lot of us a bad name, where there is bikers out. Like, I have a friend that's big into the bike. He's in the BMW club now and all. And, like, he is absolutely bike mad, but his bike is his life. Like, he absolutely loves it. Now, he'd be another one. He would be very careful. Now, I've seen some bikers that, you know, your heart would be in your mouth when you see them saying, oh, my God, I'm going to meet this fella half a mile up the road and there's going to be an accident or something. But, you know...
Do you have children, Seamus?
I do. I have two kids. I've a 9-year-old boy and a 12-year-old girl.
Now, the real test is, would you let either of them on a bike?
Look, I can't stop them. I mean, it's a few years away. I I'm nearly sure my little fella, I mean, he's bike mad now. My brother lives in Trebeggan in Meath, and I bought him a little motocross bike. Santi bought it 2 years ago for him. But now I bring him down to Glenveagan. My brother has some land down there. And like he knows when he gets on his little motocross bike, there's no messing. You know, you don't fly around. You get to know the field. And I think it's all about teaching people. And it's the same with car and trucks and buses. I mean, the way the roads are gone now at the moment is just, it's a free-for-all. I mean, like, you'd have, I was coming home from work last night there, and I had a big articulated truck in the overtaking lane. Like, there was nothing in front of this truck. He shouldn't have been in that lane. I mean, he's not meant to be in an overtaking lane.
Yeah, but given that scenario, given, as you say, the way the roads have gone, given that what we heard there from Eileen about her son Glenn, as, you know, very safety conscious, it didn't save him.
No.
Would you still, if your son decided to graduate from the motocross bike onto an actual motorbike in 6 or 7 years' time, would you have sleepless nights, do you think?
Probably for a while, yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong now. If I was on my bike, say, on a Sunday afternoon, and the wife said to me, "Look, do you want to go for a spin on the bike on my own?" And I'd say, "Yeah, brilliant." You know, if there was a motorway there and there was no cars on it, you know, I will give the bike a bit of a trip. You know what I mean? I will.
Ah, so there is moments where...
Oh, there is. And I mean, every biker will tell you. You know what I mean? I know how hard to push it. I would never do it when there's traffic around. Like, right. If I was on the N4 there, say, coming out past Maynooth or Kilcock, and you've seen a good stretch of road, and nothing on it, either way, you know, I would give her a little dart, as we call
just
it.
Just for the little thrill.
Just for a thrill. Now, it could be only for 5 or 6 seconds, 10 seconds, but I know what you're saying. That could be the 5 or 6 seconds that something will pull out, something will cross the road, a dog or a cat, and that's all it takes. So, I mean, I don't really know how to say, you know, what to do and what not to do. I mean, you can only be so safe. But I think, as Eileen says, I think drivers need to know that we have nothing around us at all. You know, if you hit my bike from the side, the first thing you're going to hit is my ankle, my leg. You know, if you hit it from behind,
you're so exposed.
You have your neck, your back. If you hit me head on, the first thing I'm going to do somersaults over. You're going to catch all the front of your bike with your chest, your lungs, your stomach, before you're thrown. So, I mean, in a bad scenario, you know, you're in a bad way at the second you get impact from any car, anywhere, front, back, side.
That is for sure. Seamus, stay with us. I want to go to Rory. Okay. Rory, you think bikers do take some chances?
Oh, no, absolutely. I was coming up from Glengarry from Sunday morning, or Sunday afternoon, I suppose, around between 1 and 1:30, and between the village of a place called Bunnan in Kinmare, there's a long stretch of road. At the end of the road, there's a big lip, and there's a continuous white line on my side of it. So I was driving away, around 70 kilometres per hour, it was. The next thing is I saw there were a lot of bikers around Kilgariff and bicycles last weekend, because the day was so fine. So the next thing is I saw my mirror, the bike coming not too fast, but reasonably fast. So I said to myself, he'll wait now until I get over the brow of the hill. Next thing is, he turns out to the right side of the road, and I said, oh no, don't do it. Zooms past me. So I slow down, hopefully he gets ahead of me before I hit the brow. So just before I hit the brow, he was getting in front of me, and then I could see a car coming in the opposite direction. So I just held my breath for a few seconds, and he just made it. You know...
Now, of course, actually, if he hadn't made it, Rory, you would have been caught up in that as well, then, wouldn't you?
That's what made me very cross, because I had been a witness to a terrible accident. But he just made it. So I was talking to a neighbour of mine, and I came home about it, and he said, "Well, yes, if that happened, now that you'd be stuck on that."
That is for
but
sure.
I was shook, to be honest with you. Yeah, I was shook. I didn't think he'd do it, because there's no way. You see, it's not a high lip; it's just a little lip. You cannot see what's coming until you get right up to the lip, to the top of it. And he just zoomed at the top, and I just arrived at the top as well. And the next thing I saw the car coming towards, you know, in the opposite direction. And he just swerved and missed it. This is just terrible.
And you're not a biker yourself, Rory?
No way. No way. No way. No, no.
So you,
I'd be a defensive driver, you know. I'd be kind of nervous on the road like that.
Yeah,
I'd be a defensive driver. I would, yeah.
And would that be one of the worst examples now you've seen of a biker taking a chance like that?
Well, I saw one years ago down in Cork City, and unfortunately, this was donkeys years ago. He came around the corner and he kept going fast, and he actually hit the road. And he was knocked off the bicycle. His girlfriend was on the bike as well, but they were okay. They survived. But this would have been a terrific accident if he'd hit that car.
It absolutely would.
But they do. Some do take chances.
Yeah, indeed.
I saw it myself.
Okay, Rory. Thanks for that, Anthony. Anthony.
Hello there. How are you?
You're a biker yourself, are you?
I am a biker for at least 38 years now. I've been driving motorcycles.
And
quite enjoy it.
Have you ever had a spill off it?
Tip a piece of wood here in the garage. No, thank God. Fell off once upon a time going down to Kilkee with a friend of mine in the back of it when I was 16 going around the bin. That's all. And tore the knees out of my shoulders. But that was it. Thank God.
Okay, you got off light.
Got up nicely and we were embarrassed, like, but that was it. But in general, you know, the accidents are going to happen. People are moving at speed. Now, motorcyclists are as much to blame as people in cars. As you know, I drive a fairly big bike. I started up, I hop up and end up with all my gear, my leathers, my boots, jacket, the whole lot. High vis jacket, start up the bike and the lights automatically come on. Everything is 100%. Now, I see plenty of motorcyclists on the road, and only yesterday evening I was driving my bike and a chap came up behind me, and I was on a rural road. I was doing 80 kilometres an hour, which was fast enough. And this fella came up behind me and just glanced in the mirror and I saw him. No high vis jacket, no lights, not at all. He passed me over 100 kilometres an hour on a rural road. And, you know, you couldn't see. The last second I spotted him coming up behind me. But not alone. I know the bikers are one issue there, but people and cars in another issue. But last week I had three instances altogether, actually, two with people on mobile phones crossing the white line on rural roads.
Speaking into the phone or texting or what were they?
They're speaking into the phone, not concentrating on what they're doing.
And wandering across the white line.
Across the road, I spotted it twice, and a third instance then, I was on another rural road and I was coming up to a junction and a car came around the corner and from my left, and he cut the whole white line, his whole car came over that white line and he was on his mobile phone. And if I would a split second earlier, he would have demolished me. You know? So that's what I'm trying to say. Like, but at the end of it all, like, it's all about enforcement by the Gardaí of the rules and the roads. That's what I'm trying to say. There's lack of enforcement overall by the Gardaí on the rules of the road by so many people there. And I'm a professional driver myself. I drive for a living myself, but I also drive my motorcycle, which I love. But I see it in my profession of the lack of enforcement of rules of the road by so many people, so many days and so many nights I see it.
And do you think that drivers who are in their cars or in their vans or in their trucks take enough care to be aware that there are also bikes, cyclists and motorbikes on the road?
They do in general, but you see, when there's a motorcycle coming up behind you, like I was there yesterday evening, a motorcycle coming up behind me, if you're in the car there and the radio is on there and whatever else and other distractions and talking, a fella comes up behind you there on a motorcycle with no lights or no high-vis jacket on, you don't even see them because they're practically invisible to you. You know, and I speak from experience. I'm vastly experienced on a motorcycle, and I drive for profession. That's my business. So I drive.
Okay, I have another very experienced biker on the line.
It's just lack of enforcement of the rules of the road, and people not obeying the rules of the road. I think the lines in the roads and the lines in the junctions, they think they're decorations for Christmas. They don't obey them.
But what would you say to parents now whose son or daughter wants to get a bike, is getting into biking?
I don't know what the situation with if you want to buy a motorcycle, I know if you buy a motorcycle now, it's a lot stricter than when I bought a motorcycle back in the day. With all the pre lessons you have to do. But when a good of a young person wants to buy a motorbike, let them take the lessons and take the lessons, but learn the rules of the road. And as I say, when you're driving, you feel 100% alert. But when you're driving a motorcycle, you feel 110% alert. You feel watching, not the car in front of you, it's the car in front of that again, because the car in front of you will react to the car in front of them. You have to be thinking, and do not take your eyes off the road for a split second, because it can happen so fast. You know, it's...
Okay, I have to say, if my daughter or son were about to embark on a career as a biker after hearing that, I'd be even more nervous, Anthony.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, it's a fabulous hobby. Now, it's a hobby for me, but for a lot of people, it's a way, a means of life that they have to travel to work and so forth, and their business and motorcycles. You know, but like, I mean, just pay attention to what they're doing and just be thinking the whole time. Don't be thinking about yourself driving the whole time. You're having fun driving a car or a motorcycle or a truck or whatever. Think about other people as well. Be a bit of consideration for other people.
Okay. Stay with us, Anthony. John Moylan, your 16-year-old is taking up motorcycling.
He is, yes. Hi, Katie.
How are you?
He's my youngest of two kids, so he's gone 16 a few months ago, and he's in the throes of working his first summer job, saving his pennies, and we're starting out on the road of motorcycling for him. Now, starting out in the sense of on the road. As a child, both my kids, my daughter and my son, they've been driving motorbikes in one form or another since they were 3 or 4 years old.
And John, your children have been driving motorbikes in one form or another since they were 3 or 4?
Correct.
What kind of motorbikes are they driving as a 3-year-old?
They started on a 50cc petrol engine quad, and then they went to a 50cc automatic Honda, and then they went to a 75cc semi-automatic Honda, and the last bike they had was a 100cc conventional motorbike, which they all have outgrown, so that's been sold, and he's now of a size and a bulk and an age where we're getting them ready for the road.
Okay, let's go back again for a second, because you're telling me now that at the age that most kids would be getting their trainer wheels off their push bikes, that your boys were on quads, on 50cc quad bikes.
Correct, and I'll be honest with you, the quad was only a relatively short thing, because I actually, despite my motorcycling career of over 30 years, I actually found that to be a slightly more dangerous prospect than the two-wheeled variety. And as soon as he was able to, we put them on to two wheels, and they have flourished. The point of all that, though,
were you worried that to put a child that young on a bike with an engine on it at all, basically?
To say I'm not worried would be incorrect. But you have to manage it. You manage the risk. I mean, I'm involved in motorcycling for a long time. I drive a motorbike both for enjoyment, but I also drive it actively. I'm involved with Blood Bike West in the west of Ireland, delivering bloods and so forth.
A fantastic service, can I say, John? Well done on that.
Thank you. And I also drive for bikemarshals.ie, chaperoning cycle races and sports events. So I spend an awful lot of time on the road. And the one thing both of those bodies, for want of a better word, have in common is the need, actually the requirement, that we achieve a certain level of training called RASPA, the Royal Society for Prevention of Accidents. Now, my two kids, that's the way I've taught them. You do properly. Now, if you think about it, let's remove motorcycling from the equation for a second. My eldest, my daughter, although being able to motorcycle, hadn't expressed an interest in going on the road and has instead gone and done her car test and passed her car test earlier this year. But the same caveats apply. I am no less afraid or worried about her as a 19-year-old on the road than I am about my 16-year-old on the road. And it's nothing to do with the form of transport. It's to do with their training and their awareness, because, unfortunately, we're in a society where you need to defensively drive. In other words, you're constantly watching for the risk coming from somewhere else. So my 16-year-old had to go through formal 16 hours of training in a school. And then he gets a permit that he has to have for 6 months, and then he can drive a little bit more liberally. And I think one of the things I have, and you may have heard of Rosemary Smith, the famous rally driver, she has a scheme for young drivers. in the Leinster Motor Campus, where they encourage 14-year-olds and upwards to learn to drive in an off-the-road scenario. And my thinking is this. If you hand a 16-year-old, you know, if your daughter or your son runs in at 16, 17 or 18 and says, hello, I'm 17, I want to go on the road, and they have no experience and no training, and you hand them the keys of a vehicle, assuming you could afford to insure it and all the rest of it, that's the worst thing you could do. And I would be scared witless. I'm hoping that the near decade of training and experience and familiarity with the dangers of a machine and being out on the road has gotten to the point that going from 16, from being a school child to being an adult on the road, is a transition and not a chasm or an abyss.
But can I just ask you, John, there, you said you'd be no less nervous of your 19-year-old going out on the road in a car than your 16-year-old going out on a bike. But are you not intrinsically more vulnerable on a bike?
Yes, you are.
So
I mean, of course you are. I mean, I'd be lying to tell you otherwise. But that doesn't mean that you don't do it. That doesn't mean that you don't assess something. If it's too risky, you won't do it. If there's a risk that you can manage and that's acceptable, both to me as a parent, to him as a child, and hopefully that he's not a child anymore at 16, but the fact that he's got to an age that he is thinking the way I think, hopefully, or close to it, that he will make the same or similar sort of assessments.
Well,
this morning I went to work with, he has a summer job at the moment, saving his pennies for his motorbike. And he came to me with work on the back of my bike this morning. It was a beautiful sunny day. And we had, and I'll be honest with you, I one step away from a near miss. And why was it? Because a guy in a car who didn't like the speed that I was driving at, which was 60 kilometres an hour, decided to overtake me on a right-hand bend on the other side of a solid white line. Yeah. And then a couple of yards up the road, he forced a Land Cruiser to brake and take evasive action because he's in a hurry somewhere. And that's, I mean, my 19-year-old in driving her car, if she's gone off to her summer job today, if she's gone off to her summer car, that risk is the same. The risk is the same. And what you have to do is teach your kids, teach your spouses, teach your partners, teach your parents. You've got to be able to assess what you're doing, have good training, and hopefully be able to avoid it if it happens. But you can't sit there in gleeful ignorance and hope that the airbags are going to save you, that the seatbelts are going to save you, your helmets and your leathers are going to protect your life. They're not. They're the last line of defence. The first line of defence is avoid the situation in the first place, and if it arises, know how to deal with it. And then we'll deal with consequences.
Okay. Alan Fallon, you've had a few near misses yourself.
Yeah, I know John from Blood Bikes West. Martin the guys. How are you, John? How are you? First of all, compliment the Blood Bikes in Ireland. What they do in this country is second to none. Blood Bikes West, East Leinster, and the rest of the Blood Bikes group. So fair play to you lads, and well done.
Absolutely.
It's a lot of it is common sense, and I mean, yes, maybe I'm wrong when I say this, that, you know, especially on a fine day on a sunny day, there is that slight little bit of jealousy that, you know, you're sat in the car. I do feel it. And I mean, I travel for a living, you know, I do 50,000 mile a year in a Jeep, and I see lads on bikes. And yes, there's lads out there, you know, that, and I go back to Seamus at the start, you get a free road and you'll push it a little bit extra. You know, and again, maybe that 5 or 6 seconds is where a problem can occur. But, you know, overall, I mean, ask John about, you know, will I have a problem with, you know, with kids? As long as they're trained properly, you know, it's a lot harder now to get a motorbike license.
But Alan, what happens if your child, if your son or daughter loves speed? Like, all the training in the world isn't going to knock that out of them.
I think if I could interject, and apologies, Alan. And I was against it at the start, but with my adult parent head on me now, many years later, I see the point of it. The fact is, a 16 or 17-year-old cannot get on a big, powerful motorbike. But a 17-year-old can go and buy any car they like of any size with no graduated power.
Correct.
Multipastor test. And that's a fundamental imbalance in the system. there's even an argument to the contrary that sometimes it works against you, but the fact of the matter is a 16-year-old, the bike they're going to be able to get on isn't usually not going to be in a position to do what it is you're talking about, although it was different when we were younger. But nowadays, you have three graduated steps, and the guys that do the advanced training around the country and the RASPA training bring young riders through that. And that's all to the good. Sorry, Alan.
Again, cut in, John. That's, yeah. I mean, again, you know, you bring an underage rider, you know, a child of 16, 17 upwards. I mean, a bike can be restricted. And I know people will be out there saying, well, you know, you hit a car, you're driving at 30, 40 mile an hour, and you hit a car at 30, 40 mile an hour, the impact is 60 mile an hour. And yes, it can kill you, right? And or badly injured. I mean, you could walk out in the street and get hit with a car and be killed. You know, a lot of it's common sense. I know about controlling the speed of someone that's new on a bike. I mean, again, if it was, you know, with my kids bringing them up, you know, through the years to try and educate them as they go along, taking them on the back of the bike with you and explaining to them and try and get that common sense into them. I'm fortunate enough that I'm 50 years of age now, and I didn't take up bike until 12, 13 years ago. So I probably have that little bit of common sense. Well,
we hope so, anyway, Alan.
You would like to think so, yes. But I mean, again, I what I will say is, in that last 12, 10 years plus, I've become a better car, stroke, jeep driver, a four-wheel drive, or four-wheel vehicle driver, a better driver, more conscious on the road than since I took up biking.
Okay, listen, we'll leave it there. Alan, thank you for that. Thank you, John. 1850 715 815.